Okay, baby kitten, we're continuing chapter 3 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Dumbledore had just walked in the door. "It is a long time since my last visit," said Dumbledore, peering down his crooked nose at Uncle Vernon. "I must say, your agapanthus are flourishing." Vernon Dursley said nothing at all. Harry did not doubt that speech would return to him soon. The vein pulsing in his uncle's temple was reaching danger point. But something about Dumbledore seemed to have robbed him temporarily of breath. Might have been the blatant wizardishness of his appearance. But it might, too, have been that even Uncle Vernon could sense that here was a man to whom it would be very difficult to bully. "Ah, good evening, Harry," said Dumbledore, looking up at him through his half-moon glasses with the most satisfied expression. "Excellent, excellent." Those words seemed to rouse Uncle Vernon. It was clear that, as far as he was concerned, any man who could look at Harry and say excellent was a man with whom he could never see eye to eye. "I don't mean to be rude," he began, in a tone that threatened rudeness in every syllable. "Yet, sadly, accidental rudeness occurs alarmingly often," Dumbledore finished the sentence gravely. "Best to say nothing at all, my dear man. Ah, and this must be Petunia." The kitchen door opened, and there stood Harry's aunt, wearing rubber gloves and a house coat over her nightdress. Clearly halfway through her usual pre-bedtime wipe-down of all the kitchen surfaces, her rather horsey face registered nothing but shock. "Albus Dumbledore," said Dumbledore, when Uncle Vernon failed to effect an introduction. "We have corresponded, of course." Harry thought this an odd way of reminding Aunt Petunia that he had once sent her an exploding letter, but Aunt Petunia did not challenge the term. "And this must be your son, Dudley?" Dudley had at that moment peered round the living room door, his large blonde head rising out of the stripy collar of his pajamas, looked oddly disembodied, his mouth gaping in astonishment and fear. Dumbledore waited a moment or two, apparently to see whether any of the Dursleys were going to say anything at all. But as the silence stretched, he smiled. "Shall we assume that you have invited me into your sitting room?" Dudley scrambled out of the way as Dumbledore passed him. Harry, still clutching the telescope and trainers, jumped down the last few stairs and followed Dumbledore, who had settled himself into the armchair nearest the fire, and was talking taking in the surroundings, with an expression of benign interest. He looked extraordinarily out of place. Aren't we leaving, sir?" Harry asked anxiously. "Yes, indeed we are, but there are a few matters we need to discuss first," said Dumbledore. "I would prefer not to do these out in the open. We shall trespass upon your aunt and uncle's hospitality only a little longer." "You will you?" Vernon Dursley entered the room, Petunia at his shoulder and Dudley skulking behind the book. "Yes," said Dumbledore simply, "I shall." He drew his wand so rapidly Harry barely saw it at all. With a casual flick, the sofa zoomed forward and knocked the knees out from under all three of the Dursleys, so they collapsed upon it in a heap. Another flick of the wand, and the sofa zoomed back to its original position. "We may as well be comfortable," Dumbledore said pleasantly, as he replaced the wand in his pocket. Harry saw that his hand was blackened and shriveled. It looked as though his flesh had been burned away. "Sir, what happened to your..." "Later, Harry," said Dumbledore. "Please sit down." Harry took the remaining armchair, choosing not to look at the Dursleys, who seemed stunned in silence. "I would assume that you were going to offer me refreshment," Dumbledore said to Uncle Vernon, "but the evidence so far suggests that it would be optimistic to the point of foolishness." A third twitch of the wand, and a dusty bottle and five glasses appeared in midair. The bottle tipped and poured a generous measure of a honey-colored liquid into each glass, and then floated to each person in the room. "Madame Rosmerta's finest oak-matured mead," said Dumbledore, raising his glass to Harry, who caught hold of his own and sipped. He had never tasted anything like it before, but enjoyed it immensely. The Dursleys, after quick, scared looks at one another, tried to ignore their glasses completely, a difficult feat as they were nudging them gently on the sides of their heads. Harry could not suppress a suspicion that Dumbledore was rather enjoying himself. "Well, Harry," said Dumbledore, turning toward him, "a difficulty has arisen which I hope you will be able to solve for us. By us, I mean the Order of the Phoenix. But first of all, I must tell you that Sirius's will was discovered a week ago, and that he left you everything he owned." Over on the sofa, Uncle Vernon's head turned, but Harry did not look at him, nor could he think of anything to say except, "Oh, right." "This is, in the main, fairly straightforward," Dumbledore went on. "You add a reasonable amount of gold to your account at Gringotts, and you inherit all of Sirius's possessions. The slightly problematic part of the legacy..." "His godfather's dead?" said Uncle Vernon wildly from the sofa. Dumbledore and Harry both turned to look at him. The glass of mead was now knocking quite insistently on the side of Vernon's head. He attempted to beat it away. "He's dead? His godfather?" "Yes," said Dumbledore. He did not ask why he had not confided in the Dursleys. "Our problem," he continued to Harry, as if there had been no interruption, "is that Sirius also left you number 12 Grimmauld Place." "He's been left a house," said Uncle Vernon greedily, his eyes narrowing, but nobody answered him. "You can keep using it as headquarters," said Harry. "I don't care. You can have it. I don't really want it." Harry never wanted to set foot in number 12 Grimmauld Place again if he could help it. He thought he would be haunted forever by the memory of Sirius prowling its dusty, dark, musty rooms alone, imprisoned within the place he had wanted so desperately to leave. "That is generous," said Dumbledore. "We have, however, vacated the building temporarily."
"Why?"
"Well," said Dumbledore, ignoring the mutterings of Uncle Vernon, who was now being rapped smartly over the head by a persistent glass of mead, "Black family tradition decreed that the house was handed down the direct line to the next male with the name Black. Sirius was the very last of his line as his younger brother. Regulus preceded him, and both were childless. Well, his will makes it perfectly plain he wants you to have the house. It is nonetheless possible that some spell or enchantment has been set upon the place to ensure it cannot be owned by anyone other than a pureblood." A vivid image of the shrieking, spitting portrait of Sirius's mother that hung in the hall of number 12 Grimmauld Place flashed into Harry's mind. "I bet there has," he said.
"Quite," said Dumbledore.
"And if such an enchantment exists, then the ownership of the house is most likely to pass to the eldest of Sirius's living relatives, which would mean his cousin, Bellatrix Lestrange." Without realizing what he was doing, Harry sprang to his feet, his telescope and trainers in his lap rolled across the floor. "Bellatrix Lestrange, Sirius's killers, inherit the house?"
"No," he said.
"Well, obviously we would prefer she didn't get it either," said Dumbledore calmly. "The situation is fraught with complications. We do not know whether the enchantments we ourselves have placed upon it, for example, making it unplottable, will hold now that the ownership has passed from Sirius's hands. It might be that Bellatrix will arrive on the doorstep at any moment. Naturally, we had to move out until such time as we have clarified the position. But how are you going to find out if I'm allowed to own it?" "Fortunately," said Dumbledore, "there is a simple test." He placed his empty glass on a small table beside his chair. But before he could do anything else, Uncle Vernon shouted, "Will you get these ruddy things off of me?" Harry looked around. All three of the Dursleys were cowering with their arms over their heads as the glasses bounced up and down against their skulls, the contents flying everywhere. "Oh, I'm so sorry," said Dumbledore politely, and he raised his wand again. All three glasses vanished. "But it would have been better manners to drink it, you know." It looked as though Uncle Vernon was bursting with any number of unpleasant retorts, but he merely shrank back into the cushions with Aunt Petunia and Dudley and said nothing, keeping his small piggy eyes on Dumbledore's wand. "Dumbledore," said, "you see," turning back to Harry, and again speaking as though Uncle Vernon had not uttered, "if you have indeed inherited the house, you also have inherited..." He flicked his wand for a fifth time. There was a loud crack, and a house elf appeared with a snout for a nose, giant bat's ears and enormous bloodshot eyes, crouching on the Dursleys' shag carpet and covered in grimy rags. Aunt Petunia let out a hair-raising shriek. Nothing this filthy had ever entered her house in living memory. Dudley drew his large, bare, pink feet off the floor and sat with them raised almost above his head as though he thought the creature might run up his pajama trousers. And Uncle Vernon bellowed, "What the hell is that?" "Creature," finished Dumbledore. "Creature won't, creature won't, creature won't," croaked the house elf, quite as loudly as Uncle Vernon, stamping his large, gnarled feet and pulling his ears. "Creature belongs to Miss Bellatrix, oh yes, creature belongs to the Blacks. Creature wants his new mistress. Creature won't go to the Potter Brat. Creature won't, won't, won't." "As you can see, Harry," said Dumbledore loudly, over Creature's continued croaks of won't, 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 "Creature is showing a certain reluctance to pass into your ownership." "I don't care," Harry said again, looking with disgust at the writhing, stamping house elf. "I don't want him." "Won't, won't, 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 won't." "You'd prefer him to pass into the ownership of Bellatrix Lestrange, bearing in mind that he has lived at the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix for the past year?" "Won't, won't, won't." Harry stared at Dumbledore. He knew that Creature would not be permitted to go and live with Bellatrix Lestrange, but the idea of owning him, of having responsibility for the creature that had betrayed Sirius, was repugnant. "Give him an order," said Dumbledore. "If he has passed into your ownership, he will have to obey. If not, then we shall have to think of some other means of keeping him from his rightful mistress." "Won't, won't, won't." Creature's voice had risen to a scream. Harry could have think of nothing else to say except, "Creature, shut up." It looked for a moment as though Creature was going to choke. He grabbed his throat, his mouth still working furiously, his eyes bulging. After a few seconds of frantic gulping, he threw himself face forward onto the carpet. Aunt Petunia whimpered and beat the floor with his hands and feet, giving himself over to a violent, but not entirely silent, tantrum. "Well, that simplifies matters," said Dumbledore cheerfully. "It seems that Sirius knew what he was doing. You are the rightful owner of number 12, Grimmauld Place, and of Creature." Do I have to keep him with me?" Harry asked, aghast, as Creature thrashed around his feet. "Not if you don't want him to. And not if you don't want to," said Dumbledore. "If I might make a suggestion, you could send him to Hogwarts to work in the kitchens there. In that way, the house elves could keep an eye on him." "Yeah," said Harry in relief. "Yeah, I'll do that. Creature, I want you to go to Hogwarts and work in the kitchens there with the other house elves." Creature, who was now lying flat on his back with his arms and legs in the air, gave Harry one upside-down look of deepest loathing and with another loud crack vanished. "Good," said Dumbledore. "There is also the matter of the hippogriff, Buckbeak. Hagrid has been looking after him since Sirius died, but Buckbeak is now yours, so if you'd prefer to make different arrangements..." "No," said Harry at once. "He can stay with Hagrid. I think Buckbeak would prefer that." "Hagrid will be delighted," said Dumbledore, smiling. He was thrilled to see Buckbeak again. "Incidentally, we have decided in the interest of Buckbeak's safety to christen him Witherwings for the time being, though I doubt that the Ministry would ever guess he is the hippogriff they once sentenced to death. Now, Harry, is your trunk packed?" "Doubtful I would turn up," Dumbledore suggested shrewdly. "I'll just go and finish off," said Harry hastily, hurrying to pick up his fallen telescope and trainers. It took him a little over 10 minutes to track down everything he needed. At last, he managed to extract his invisibility cloak from under the bed, screwed the top back on the jar of color change ink, and forced the lid of his trunk shut on his cauldron. Then, heaving his trunk in one hand, holding Hedwig's cage in the other, he made his way back downstairs. He was disappointed to discover that Dumbledore was not waiting for him in the hall, which meant that he had to return to the living room. Nobody was talking. Dumbledore was humming quietly, apparently quite at ease, but the atmosphere was thicker than cold custard, and Harry did not dare look at the Dursleys as he said, "Professor, I'm ready now." "Good," said Dumbledore. "Just one last thing, then," and he turned to speak to the Dursleys once more. "As you will no doubt be aware, Harry comes of age in a year's time. No, said Aunt Petunia, speaking for the first time since Dumbledore's arrival.
I'm sorry, said Dumbledore politely.
No, he doesn't. He's a month younger than Dudley, and Dudders doesn't turn 18 until the year after next.
Ah, said Dumbledore pleasantly. But in the wizarding world, we come of age at 17.
Uncle Vernon muttered, preposterous, but Dumbledore ignored him.
Now, as you already know, the wizard called Lord Voldemort has returned to this country. The wizarding world is currently in a state of open warfare. Harry, whom Lord Voldemort has attempted to kill on a number of occasions, is in an even greater danger now than the day when I left him upon your doorstep 15 years ago with a letter explaining about his parents' murder and expressing the hope you would care for him as you would your own son.
Dumbledore paused, and although his voice remained light and calm, and he showed no obvious sign of anger, Harry felt a chill emanating from him, and noticed that the Dursleys drew very slightly closer.
You did not do as I asked. You have never treated Harry as a son. He has known nothing but neglect and often cruelty at your hands. The best that can be said is that he has at least escaped the appalling damage you have inflicted upon the unfortunate boy sitting between you.
Both Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon looked around instinctively as though expecting to see someone else there, other than Dudley, squeezed between them.
Us? Mistreat Dudders? What do you... began Uncle Vernon furiously. But Dumbledore raised his finger for silence, a silence which fell as though he had struck Uncle Vernon dumb.
The magic I invoked 15 years ago means that Harry has powerful protection, while he can still call this place home. However miserable he has been here, however unwelcome, however badly treated, you have at least grudgingly allowed him house room. This magic will cease to operate the moment Harry turns 17, in other words, at the moment he becomes a man. I only ask this, that you allow Harry to return once more to this house before his 17th birthday, which will ensure that the protection continues until that time.
None of the Dursleys said anything. Dudley was frowning slightly, as though he was still trying to work out when he had ever been mistreated.
Uncle Vernon looked as though something had struck him in the throat. Aunt Petunia, however, was oddly flushed.
"Well, Harry, time for us to be off," said Dumbledore at last, standing up and straightening his long black cloak.
"Until we meet again," he said to the Dursleys, who looked as though that moment could wait forever as far as they were concerned. And after doffing his hat, he swept from the room.
"Bye," said Harry hastily to the Dursleys, and followed Dumbledore, who paused beside Harry's trunk, upon which Hedwig's cage was perched.
Sorry, we'll continue now. "Bye," said Harry hastily to the Dursleys, and followed Dumbledore, who paused beside Harry's trunk, upon which Hedwig's cage was perched.
"We do not want to be encumbered by these just now," he said, pulling out his wand again. "I shall send them to the Burrow to await us there. However, I would like you to bring your invisibility cloak, just in case."
Harry extracted his cloak from his trunk with some difficulty, trying not to show Dumbledore the mess within. When he had stuffed it into an inside pocket of his jacket, Dumbledore waved his wand, and the trunk, cage, and Hedwig vanished. Dumbledore then waved his wand again, and the front door opened onto cool, misty darkness. "And now, Harry, let us step out into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure." And that's the end of chapter 3. Next, we'll read chapter 4, called Horace Slughorn.